February 21st. That means a solid day of music on Tuesdays, starting with the Great Wide Open, followed by the R&R Show and Border Radio. Look forward to joining you each and every Tuesday.
Hi, I'm Mel.
And I'm Ro.
We're from Shame on Me.
And you're listening to KPFT Houston.
The 8-track tape format was introduced in 1965 and held its reign through the 1970s. This is our focus. In the beginning, 8-track was an automotive-only format, so music from this period sounded best when it was played really loud through Jensen Triax speakers mounted on the back dash of a Camaro. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
Let's keep those tomcats away. You've got better things to do than have 6 kittens who feed off you. You know that life is sweet when you're not in heat. So don't be afraid. Let's get spayed.
Let's get neutered. You're so much more than a reproducer. It don't mean that you've failed if you don't spend your nights chasing tail. You'll learn to be calm when your equipment's gone. And you'll be cuter when you're neutered.
And welcome to Vegan World Radio, live once again here on KPFT, the People's Radio, on this 3rd of February as we enter the dark times, it seems, but the days are getting longer, so just waiting for that pendulum to swing back the other direction. And of course, animals are always the most vulnerable, the most susceptible to what goes wrong in society. And we are here to speak for them in the Vegan World Radio program. And we've been doing that for many a year, just like many of the programs here on KPFT. And we appreciate all of the listeners who have supported us throughout the years and the fund drives and in other ways, and kept KPFT on the air with all the great things that it has to offer. I appreciate y'all for listening. Great Open Journal show tonight. We're going to be followed by, as always, the Whole Mother program. I'm sure they got a great lineup for that as well, so you might stay tuned for that. But joining us tonight, once again, is a very interesting couple of people who've got a lot to share with the program. Dr. Crystal Heath is a veterinarian and executive director of Our Honor, a nonprofit that empowers veterinary students, veterinarians, and other animal professionals to speak their conscience and to work for the best interests of all species. And she's been on the show before. Welcome back. And we also, hey thank you. And we also want to welcome for the first time Skyjack Morgan. He is an award-winning writer, activist, YouTuber. He operated the OETA abduction and Hell on Wheels tours all over America. Maybe he'll tell us about that tonight. He also appeared at over 60 university campuses. He's engaged in numerous speaking engagements and has carried out animal rights actions and demos in hundreds of cities. So welcome to you both.
Thanks. It's great being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us. This is awesome.
Well, I understand that you guys have a lot to say about the condition that animals live in as they're affected by what people's actions and our society. What is the state of animal justice in February 2025?
You want to go first, Sky?
the state of animal justice.
How's it going out there? Or what do you guys want to talk about? What's on your mind?
There's a lot on our mind. I guess the state of animal justice is still, you know, the arc is bending toward justice, I'd like to say, and animals are certainly in the news a lot lately. So I think that it's, you know, it's more opportunities than ever to speak up for them and more issues facing them. So I think it's a good time to go vegan and it's a good time to speak up for animals.
Yeah, I mean, so much is needed right now. There's a lot going on with the new administration, a lot of drama, new media blackout, which we hope to dive into. I've been interviewed by several different press lately. Salon interviewed me to discuss the current administration's media blackout, which I hope we can dive into a little bit more. And I've also been investigating how much we have spent to bail out these large corporations in response to avian influenza. And you would think with the Department of Government Efficiency that maybe they would want to do something about that and stop giving millions of dollars to billion-dollar corporations. So,
Well, you know, interesting thought. I know you guys have a lot of things you want to talk about, but just very briefly, I was thinking about this. It's been in periods of conservative hegemony that people have actually, the rate of people becoming vegetarian actually peaked. Like, this is my theory, maybe I'm wrong, but I think 1890s, mm-hmm. Coming out of the 1950s, coming out of the Reagan era in the 80s, haven't those kind of been the peaks of people of turning towards, opening their minds towards justice for animals? Like, I'm wondering, is there something about reacting to, you know, the rich getting richer and conservative fascism and the billionaires taking over that maybe gets people to think more ethically? Or what do you think?
I think people are encouraged to, when you mention those eras and you think of the music of those eras, right? I don't know if you're like me, and when I hear about the past, I think about, I'm a music buff, and I start thinking about punk rock and how much veganism and vegetarianism, just critical thinking, is kind of advertised through music. And it's funny because that's something that I've been focusing on so much, is that, hey, we need to be holding those power structures accountable and questioning them constantly and challenging that authority. And when you see them grab for it, you know, when you see these despots grab for power, you have to push back. And when you push back, sometimes it's because you said hegemony, and it's those hegemonic structures that become apparent, right? They crystallize, and you see them for the first time sometimes, like Toto's pulling back that curtain in front of the wizard, and you start questioning everything. And maybe it's when you start questioning the food systems and what we're doing to animals, and you start making changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we have to spin the narrative, because the corporations, they're going to spend billions and billions of dollars to try to get us to eat more meat. And, can we resist that? Can the people rise up and see how they're being manipulated and how we're forced to pay these huge companies? And will we rebel against that? We shall see.
Yeah, and this time with the we can call it conservatism, but I'm not even sure that's true. But with like certain things, I mean, the sands are shifting, right? And when those shifting sands, when you start looking at them, the pricing structure can change dramatically. I've been thinking a lot about the tariffs and what that means for animals. It's going to drastically affect the price of flesh in America. There's no way around it. What will we do, and how will we adjust?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all remains to be seen. How will we adjust? Right now, a lot of the scientific research that was being spent on animal agriculture is on hold right now. A lot of research into infectious disease outbreaks is on hold. Will that lead to more animals getting sick? Will that lead to temporarily perhaps worse animal welfare while more animals get sick? But will this mean that the industry is unsustainable and they'll have to pivot, and maybe they'll see a future in animal-free methods of food production instead? That very much could be the future.
And we know it's unsustainable, right? Like, it's so clearly unsustainable as they poison our rivers and streams. It's so clearly unsustainable as it's 73% of the income of these dairy farms is from the taxpayer, is through subsidy. It's so clearly unsustainable for anyone who takes a second to look at it. And that's what I mean. Maybe when people start looking, I just think that it's immediately obvious. And hopefully more and more people will be looking.
And yet, Nebraska's governor, Jim Pillen, is trying to ban lab-grown meat. Here he is, a veterinarian, hog farmer, governor of Nebraska, taking millions of dollars in bailouts for his hog business, and also controlling the laws and banning competitors in his own state, preventing us access to animal-free food. Wild.
It's so weird, that one. Have you, Crystal, have you ever spent any time in Nebraska?
I have not, actually. My sister actually used to live there, but I never visited when she was there. Yeah.
So my dad is from Nebraska. So I've been to Nebraska a few times, and I just did, when I was on that PETA tour that was mentioned at the top of the show, I was, I stopped in many cities in Nebraska and talked with people there and did some outreach, and it's weird because everyone there seems so, that Midwestern kind of openness,
nice.
And yeah, nice. Yeah. You know, like that Midwestern vibe, it doesn't get much more Midwestern than Nebraska. And also kind of really into freedom and liberty. And I don't really see how that's freedom and liberty to limit people's choices when it comes to how does that speak to the American liberty to have a governor saying that they want to ban I'm not into lab grown flesh. I'll just put that out there.
Yeah.
I'm not interested. But why are they? How does that speak to your sense of liberty as an American? And especially, like, you know, it seems very weird to me that Pillen would be going on that route.
It's very strange, and it you know, you'd think that they would be listening to themselves and being like, "Don't you see what you guys are doing? Are you really that threatened by lab grown meat? Is your industry, like, it must be a big threat to them to take this extreme measure to actually, like, ban this product in their state. That's quite something. And yet here we are.
I wonder what happens then. So, like, Florida banned it, and now did it pass in? Is it already a done deal in Nebraska, or is it just something that's
I don't know the current status of it, actually. I think it might still be unfolding.
But Governor Pillen wants it banned, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, do these bans work? Like, so Nebraska's gonna have this on the books, and they don't ban cigarettes. They don't ban any of these other things, but they ban...
But this.
This.
Which, not fur, not decline cats.
Not fur, yeah.
Like, what are good things we could... Child labor might be.
No, yeah, they won't ban child labor. I remember when all those child labor... Where were all the child labor problems? In slaughterhouses. So, no, don't ban child labor, because we might have to shut the slaughterhouses. But ban the lab-grown meat... It's not even here yet. How are you banning stuff that isn't even here? They're banning even the research into it.
Yeah. And here's the other irony. At the same time, while they're banning that, they are fighting back against California's Prop 12, which was a law passed in California that would prevent pork from pigs whose mothers were kept in gestation crates. They demanded, the California voters wanted all flesh from pigs sold in California to come from mothers who were given at least 25 square feet of space, which would take them out of gestation crates, which gestation crates, if you don't know, are these 2.5 by 7 foot stalls where the pigs just stand and they don't have enough room to turn around or even lay down comfortably in most cases. And they're
so
just lined up.
Let me see this. So it's 2.5 feet by
two
7 feet.
By seven.
So 2.5 feet. Like, I feel like I'm 2.5 feet wide. Am I?
Mm-hmm.
I'm the size of a sow. Okay. So 2.5 feet, and I'm 6'5". So if you put me in a gestation crate, I would not be able to move at all. I wouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
That sounds like a medieval. I was in Amsterdam once, and I went to the medieval torture museum, and they had devices like the one that you've just described, the gestation crate. Maybe there will be in the future museums of the horrible tools we use to torture animals. Maybe that would be, it'll be like, oh, it's crazy that we ever did that. Just like these museums. And okay, so gestation crates and California.
The bridal,
like,
what is that? The skull, the thing that they put on the woman's face. There's that. I forget what that's called.
The gossips, it's like the gossip gold or something. Yeah, and it goes in your mouth so you can't tell a lie.
You
my gosh.
Talk,
Yeah, crazy stuff people used to do. And we think of it as these horror, these kind of, it's supposed to be, when you go to those museums, it's like a horror show. And it's the same kind of thing with, when I think of gestation crates. So California banned them, right?
You cannot sell pig meat if a pig's mother was confined to a gestation crate. Some pig meat, not even all pig meat, only like whole pig meat. If it's ground up, you can sell it in California. Only whole pig meat. But this law passed in California, went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court heard it. But who wrote an amicus brief? You know, all of these pork industry people wrote amicus briefs trying to get the Supreme Court to overturn Prop 12. So they're saying, we don't want you to restrict us that way. We want to be able to force our pig meat onto Californians.
Who voted, subverting the will of the people, who voted
for this.
Having that flesh in their state, yeah.
We are going to ban the sale of cultivated meat in our state. Like, do we see the hypocrisy here?
I mean, it's not wasted on me. So, but that's the SCOTUS, right? So SCOTUS, they said that California's ban is constitutional. It stands.
Yeah,
right?
It stands. Okay.
So now, so they wrote, they waste all this time and money and wasted all of America's time and money to do this and lost. And now they're banning, I guess their ban's going to hold as well, right? It'll hold. Like, we're not going to be able to fight it.
Well, this ban, who knows? Maybe we could fight it at the Supreme Court. Not sure. But, I mean, they are still fighting Prop 12 and the Farm Bill. Mm. The Farm Bill is still being haggled. And, in fact, the American Veterinary Medical Association even wrote a letter in strong support of this one section of the Farm Bill, Section 12007, which has language that would overturn Prop 12. So the pork industry is still viewing this as a major threat and we have to somehow subvert the will of the people for the interests of the pork industry and their economics.
And their ability to torture pigs in these strange devices called gestation crates. So this gestation crate thing, Crystal, like we just were at VMX and you're reminding me of, so VMX, can you tell everyone what VMX is so I don't just go off on this tangent alone?
VMX is the largest veterinary conference in the world, 27,000 people. It stands for Veterinary Meeting Expo.
Yeah.
It was in Orlando, Florida. I spoke there about activism in the veterinary profession. We had a booth there and
Okay. So at the VMX, I'm still in Florida, of course. And, there was a slide in one of the presentations that we saw, one of these talks that it kind of gave just brief history, just bullet points of the history of flesh farming in America, of animal protein production in America. And it was mostly, you know, they use terms like factory farming. I don't like to use that term because when something's 99% of farms are factory farms, it's safe to me to say it's all factory. It's all farm. All farms are factory farms. Why do we even call them that anymore?
Mm-hmm.
So these like factories for flesh. But one of the slides said that it mentioned gestation crates. And it's weird because the pork industry wants to fight as if they cannot live without gestation crates. They want to fight for their right to put pigs in these tiny little cages. Mother pigs only, right?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, a mother of – it's just so disgusting to put any mother through this. And they act like they can't live without it. But this slide was saying that it was the gestation crates were invented in the 1980s.
Yeah, so it's a relatively new thing.
It's brand new, man. It's 40 years old. I mean, I'm older than the gestation crate. Mm-hmm. So it's weird that they are going to fight it as if they can't make money without gestation crate. Clearly they were making money.
Absolutely. But the pork, if you look at the growth of the pork industry, it's like tech. The amount of growth in this industry over the years is absolutely astonishing. And we need to figure out. And it's so funny now, you know, that we're trying to bring in cultivated meat and all of these other things. They're like, what about the jobs, or like banned slaughterhouses? Yeah. What about the jobs, lost jobs? Well, how many jobs have, because we lost when we introduced gestation crates.
Yeah, how many jobs were lost? Yes.
So much easier to take care of so many pigs with just a few workers when you have them all lined up in these gestation crates
up in little cages
for 114 days of their pregnancy.
You're absolutely right.
So let's create some jobs by taking the pigs out of gestation crates if you're so worried about creating jobs.
That's what they should have done. I remember when we voted for Prop 12, I was a California voter when that happened, and they didn't mention that in the explanation. This is the problem with vegans, Crystal. Mm-hmm. We never talk. Now that we have a conservative leadership in all three branches of government, unbelievable. All three, I can't believe I'm saying this out loud. All three branches of government are locked in for the conservative side of the aisle. And they're the ones that say they care about jobs. We should be saying ban gestation crates nationwide for the sake of the worker. We just need to stop trampling on our ability to work.
But of course, now we're deporting a lot of people. So we'll see if that works out for them.
Production will simply have to go down.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. We'll see if it works out for them.
Yeah, well, that is one of my favorite things going on right now for animals, right, is if we can go back, because we did talk about, all right, so this ties in with tariffs and deportation and how that affects animals. And Salon had an article, I guess it came out yesterday, and they talked about Trump administration's communication freeze restricted access to critical bird flu information. And it's one of those. So we're talking about how the government is now purposely obfuscating, or maybe accidentally, but you can't access the information about the bird flu outbreak and how it's affecting the animals in these industries.
Yeah, especially related to this particular article is about dairy veterinarians. We have heard, we have data on dairy workers that 7% of all dairy workers are serologically positive for H5N1, which means
serologically,
been exposed. They may not be sick. They may not be shedding it, but they have antibodies basically for H5N1. And we wanted to see, well, what's the risk to dairy vets? The nature of their job is a little bit different. Are they more likely to get it? Are they less likely to get it? And I've been waiting for this, these results to come out. The CDC was going to have a webinar on this and give the results. And now there's this media blackout. The webinar was canceled. We do not have access to the results. The results are nowhere to be seen. So Elizabeth, what's her last name? Alinka? Mm-hmm.
She's got a hard to pronounce last name.
Lavinka reached out to me to discuss this. So I'm featured in the article too. And I say how the Trump administration sort of initiated this pause to set up this process for review and prioritization of communications, which is very concerning because I have concerns about how they handled COVID-19. I mean, famously left this slaughterhouses working, used the Defense Production Act to keep slaughterhouses going
during
workers
COVID.
Got sick.
Yeah,
these were nidus of infection that ended up exacerbating the COVID-19 outbreak. So
what's interesting to me though is that a lot of it's not just a Trump thing. Like other presidents, they do these media blackouts during these during the changing of the guards, right? They don't know who's who. They want to get their people in before they have official statements coming out from
the CDC. I feel like this is a little bit more than that, though.
It's a little bit more than that? Why? Why is it different?
This is, I feel like we've never seen this level of, like, not able to communicate. This level of studies, research is now being stopped. I've never heard of webinars being canceled, CDC webinars being canceled.
But could that be because we never have had an outbreak like this? This is the worst H5N1 outbreak in history. It's the first bird flu in history. It's the worst American livestock outbreak since, like, foot and mouth disease in the 1920s or something.
We had, you know, COVID at the end of the first Trump administration. Then we had Biden take over.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything like this.
I feel like when Biden took over, he did have blackouts with exceptions. Like, the CDC kept going, the virologist, because they didn't change. Fauci still had a job, right? They didn't switch everybody. And maybe that's also the thing. Not everybody lost their jobs when Biden took over. A lot of people kept their jobs. And in this case, it's a fire sale. Like, everyone's getting fired. And that's, you know, it's pretty funny because "you're fired" was his whole thing, right? He's literally firing the government. And so it takes a while. Like, I don't know, your first 100 days and you've had a new job before, right? You got to figure out what your, how your voicemail, how you access, like, you got to get your email right. How are you going to log in? It's hard when you start a new job. And no one's even there to do it with you because everyone just got fired. You're walking into an empty building and taking over. It's going to be rough.
Usually, you know, the heads of these departments, their terms overlap different administrations so that there's a smooth transition.
Yeah, tell that to Christopher Wray.
It was Christopher Wray.
The FBI director who just got pushed out and he's no longer with us, in government. Yeah, he had I think another 2 years left in his appointment. He's gone.
Yeah.
Pushed out. It's
kind of abrupt. Like, now we're taking over everything in a very short period of time. We're just going for it.
But unfortunately that leaves us a lot in the dark. But I don't think that we're the only ones. Okay, so I understand, like, that bit of fear, right? So our vets getting our cow vets getting bird flu, and I get that. But don't you think the industry's got to be afraid too? They got to be shaking in their boots a little bit, these industries.
I know. I wonder what they're thinking. Do they think that they can have control over the Trump administration? I mean, we know billionaires seem to have a lot of influence with
That's
the guy.
True.
I
That's
think
true.
They're probably thinking their interests are protected. It's like, we're among the billionaire class. Now that the oligarchs are taking over, they're the smart ones who are figuring out how to feed the world.
Maybe you're right, Crystal. You know. And I think under anybody else, I think I'd be afraid of that. But this guy seems to only like the cool billionaires, you know, the ones that know Joe Rogan and have huge media outlets. He likes those guys. I didn't see any oil tycoons and the Cargill family. They were,
you know, because they're smart. This is how they've become the wealthiest family in the world. This is why they have 21 billionaires in their family. They are smart. They know how to fly under the radar and just have good vibes of, we're feeding the world while committing mass atrocities.
That is smart. Like, if you want to escape the guillotine, you better have you better have some humility. You know what I mean? You better be real chill. Like, oh no, we're just real cool. Like, we're just feeding America. Then we're not doing anything.
Yeah, no, they're sitting behind the scenes laughing at Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk going,
dang it.
Better
dang
you
it,
than
you're
me.
Probably right.
Yep.
Dang it. All right, but still, like, okay, so they've got to at least be a little bit worried about, because they're going to be rich either way. They're so mm-hmm. billionaire. They're chabillionaire. and they
chabillionaires. Yes.
They're chabillionaires. Okay, so But they've got to at least be worried about they're diversified, you know. So the billionaires might not be worried, but all those little farmers that live under them, like the vertically integrated farmer, chicken farmer, you know, like because
oh, the contractors, they're always screwed, and they will always be.
So they probably feel really screwed right now because, like, all of a sudden, their workforce is being deported.
They have no workers.
They have no workers, right? They're who knows about the subsidies? Those could evaporate. You don't know. Like things are just money just gets evaporated lately. Like they're just closing the aid, right? They're closing all sorts of offices and saying that this money's just gone. Okay, mm-hmm. So that could go away really easily. They don't know. And the tariffs could really just drive up the prices and the demand on American American protein productions. So they could be working harder than ever, making less money than ever. That could put you out of business.
And we've seen this story before, but luckily there's the Farm Service Agency. So when they can't pay their mortgage and they go bankrupt, their mortgages are insured by the federal government. So the government bails out the bank who gave them the mortgage. Then they can sell it to a new schmuck who comes along, takes up their farm, and they can still do their contracts with whatever big chicken company, and even get extra, you know, home equity loan or whatever, an extra mortgage to upgrade the facility to make it even better for the big corporation to then house their chickens there. And when those chickens get sick, and die of avian influenza or are exterminated because of avian influenza.
Yeah.
It's not that contract farmer who gets all the money. It's the big corporation, the Tysons, the Jennie-Os, the whoever.
Right. They get the bailout. There's not the
little guy gets pennies on the dollar.
Yeah. The little dude in Nebraska fighting, I'm going to vote against this stuff. That guy, he's still getting screwed. You know, like he thinks he's voting against lab grown meat. And meanwhile, he's taking it on the other side because of these billionaires. Okay. So
exactly.
All right. But that still means I'm still trying to stay positive, Crystal. You're making you're making it hard to stay positive. But this still means that as changes occur, you're still seeing it, like they're turning the bottom of the fishbowl. You know, there's all this confusion and scary, the blackouts and indemnity payments that might not arrive because money's been frozen, assets are being frozen. You know, who knows? Elon Musk, he could tomorrow decide that he wants to freeze indemnity payments to chicken farmers. Tomorrow
that would not chicken farmers, chicken corporations.
Right.
That would be great if he did that. If he stopped, I mean, Jennie-O Turkey Store has gotten $120 million of our money right now. Cal-Maine Foods, $44 million of our money. And Sentient Media just wrote an article about this too, which features some of our data and going into just how much money we have given these corporations.
The Sentient Media article, that's a great article about how much of our money is going into this horrible system, whether or not we're vegan. Like we sit here and tell people like, go vegan, stop eating animals. And that's the right thing to do. In fact, it's the only choice for a thinking person. But even if you're vegan, you're still giving these companies money. It's galling. $40 million going to Cal-Maine. That's ridiculous. But it could be just on a whim, the guy puts down his, you know, Elon Musk, he stops playing Diablo 4 for a couple minutes, and he goes, I'm gonna make America great again. And then he just says no more indemnity. That could happen.
That could happen. That would be a big, big change. It would level the playing field. It would allow animal-free methods of food production to expand.
We are living in chaotic times. And in these chaotic times, usually leading up to a world war in history, usually it's right before a world war. So I'm a little worried there. But in the realm of veganism, like a lot of times that happens and farmers start doing weird stuff too. They start going, I'm done with all this. There's easier ways to turn a buck. And there always have been easier ways to turn a buck than waking up and doing these things like hooking up animals to weird robotic udder suckers, you know, like, like we could get rid of this. Like, there's easier ways to make a dollar. And especially if the government's not just going to hand our money over to them all the time, just forking, you know, pitchforking money into the incinerator. So
yeah,
this might be good for animals. Maybe this is the time that.
Yeah. You would think they would be all about the board cow milk, where you could make cow's milk without cows, like via precision fermentation. This is more efficient. Yeah. If you want government efficiency, board cow milk is government efficiency, because 73% of dairy revenues right now come from some form of subsidy. So let's take the cow out of the milk production process. Let's streamline this whole method of protein production. And you need fewer workers to do that.
No, we got to tell them we're going to create jobs. It's going to create good jobs for Americans.
Americans.
That's what we need. Good jobs for Americans. That really speaks to the mm-hmm. that Elon Musk, he really cares about that. And like, he's what else is he? He doesn't care about the environment. Remember, he said that killing cows is good for the environment. I mean, he's one of those guys, right? Thinks that killing cows is good for the planet. This craziness.
We got to get him to look at the data here. And that's another thing. So all of the Green New Deal stuff is cut. Like, they're not going to do that anymore. A lot of that was these, I don't know how much of the federal government was, but here in California, there's these low carbon fuel standard credits that are going to these dairies. They cover the manure lagoons with tarps, capture the methane, sell these low carbon fuel standard credits. And a lot of the dairies made more money doing that than they did by selling milk. So all of these green initiatives, all these subsidies going to beef and dairy and other animal-based protein producers to greenify their systems. And all that research is going away, which could be a good thing.
Could be a good thing. And if we are able to, if we're able to get him to tweet about, he doesn't care about the environment, right? But he cares about efficiency, supposedly. Maybe we need to be, maybe that's the new vegan mantra. Maybe that's what activists need to be saying. This is not only unsustainable. Unsustainable is, like, we talk about that. It sounds like we're talking about the environment, sustainability and all that. Inefficiency is the new buzzword. It's inefficient to feed a cow, you know, 50% of California's water supply. Like, you know, Donald Trump keeps talking about the smelt is efficient. He's always talking about the smelt fish, right? The Delta smelt, like, is the Delta smelt lit the fires in the Palisades? It's all that Delta smelt's fault. If we could just stop that fish from playing with fire, we told him a million times, and he kept doing it. That smelt, but if instead of doing that, talk about the Delta smelt, we could talk about the fact that California uses 50% of its water supply for
I mean, specifically, the Colorado River is the big deal, and you know, for Texas listeners here, it right now, like, 79% of the Colorado's river flow goes to agriculture. 55% of it goes to livestock feed. That's it's like a trillion gallons, I guess it is. Over a trillion gallons goes to livestock feed. It's just a huge numbers.
It's not efficient, I would say, putting 50% of the Colorado River to livestock feed.
Yeah.
This is before they drink a drop, right? Like, it's
less than 1% is actually what they drink. Right. The vast majority of it is going to grow alfalfa, hay, grasses, corn silage. So a lot of it is dairy. Food. And they always talk about, I don't know if you've seen all the animal ag propaganda, but it's like, the dairy cows eat food that we can't eat. Their food is being grown on land that could grow food that we could eat.
Or we could turn it into a park. I don't care what we do with it. Like, it doesn't have to be, we don't have to do anything. We don't have to actually use every square foot of land. You know that? Like, We could just have wide open spaces. I mean, I think that's pretty cool that aren't growing corn and soy for cows, chickens, and pigs. But
Yeah, about one third of our arable land right now, which is the land that can grow crops, is going to grow crops to feed livestock. And
that's
they talk about,
inefficient.
how livestock are upcyclers. They use the waste. So they always wanted to make the argument that you don't eat the whole soybean, like the soy hulls and the rice hulls and the almond hulls. Those can go to feed livestock. But even still, even if we just threw that away, we'd still be better off, even if
If
we
they
didn't
were
feed them
if they
that.
were only feeding them the stuff that we didn't eat after you process just enough soy for the humans, and you only had the waste after that that you were allowed to feed to cows, chickens, and pigs, there wouldn't be much. There wouldn't be enough to sustain all of these animals. We've at any given time, we're killing 10 billion chickens every year in America. Something like 300 million pigs. I think it's 100 something million cows are being killed every year in America. And it's completely inefficient to be feeding, watering, and boarding all of these animals. We can't feed them with our waste. They outnumber us by the billion, by billions.
And it, yeah, they always say like, oh, what about all the soybeans you're going to grow? Like, we can't feed the world. Well, it turns out the American Soybean Association says 90% of US soybeans produced are used as high quality protein source for animal feed.
Animals, yeah,
So
90%. 90%.
90% of the soybeans we grow
So,
goes to animal feed.
Crystal, when I was driving that truck for PETA and all across America, I drove across the United States like four times last year. And you know what I saw a lot of? It was amazing. I did it, like on one side of the road, corn as far as the eye can see. On the other side, soy as far as the eye can see. And the eye can see pretty far in places like Nebraska. And you could see really far because it's flat. And there's no way. There's only 350 million Americans or something like that. There's not, enough people to eat all that soy. Like, I'm vegan. I don't eat that much soy. I mean, I ate some tofu, but I mean, and I know there's soy oil in my peanut butter, but like I can't really think. I don't eat that much soy. I mean, I can't eat that much edamame.
Yeah.
Lot of edamame.
Well, we could certainly start feeding the world, maybe with all of that stuff that we're growing, or we could grow different crops too. Monoculture agriculture ain't all that great. And we
True.
could, diversify.
Grow nothing. Grown up, that's a great thing about being vegan. You could just have the air, have the land be wild again and prevent the next dust bowl and prevent soy degradation. We could cycle through land and just have much more of it wild. Maybe
I
give
think.
more land to the wild animals. It's sad that there aren't so many wild animals. What's the percentage of wild animals on Earth? The mammalian biomass is like.
Oh, I have that right in front of me, actually. So we have 60% of the biomass on Earth is farmed animals, 36% is humans, only 4% are wild animals. Of birds on Earth, you have 70% of the birds on Earth are farmed poultry birds,
Yeah.
only 30% are wild birds.
So I love the birds. That's the bird thing brings. So the first one was mammals, right? So mammals are almost there. Almost are no wild mammals left. 4% of mammalian biomass on planet Earth is wild. So basically, when you go see those wild horses out in I saw the wild horses in Wyoming, and I'm like, let's stop rounding these guys up. There aren't that many. There's only 4% of mammals that are allowed to live wild in this world. So sad. But the birds. So 70% of birds are enslaved, right? They're owned by somebody else. They're not free living
In
animals.
cages. The average lived existence of a bird on Earth is a bird trapped in a cage of some kind, in a barn, in a building.
not just average, but the overwhelming majority.
Absolutely.
70%. That's almost, you know, that's, we haven't had a president win 70% of the, that's way more than the majority, right? We 70% is a lot. So 70% of birds are in cages, and usually in little tiny cages, if you care how big a cage is. Now, and yet every time bird flu comes up, Crystal, I'm always hearing that they want to kill wild birds because they blame the wild birds bird flu.
Like we have to order nature. Like those ones are the reason that somehow these big buildings that are, you know, biosecure facilities are somehow being put at risk by these wild birds out there who are out there spreading bird flu. And this whole intensive, modern intensive animal agriculture thing, relatively new thing. We brought up the gestation crates before. It's not something that existed before. And they always talk about what are the unintended consequences of us banning something like gestation crates or banning battery cages.
Yeah.
What are the unintended consequences? Well, nobody ever asks, what are the unintended consequences of depending on a method of food production that requires us to confine en masse this many animals in such a small space that are genetically similar in close contact with human beings? What are the unintended consequences of this method of protein production?
Almost as if, like, I don't know, you know, Dan Carlin, he talks about like the hardcore history. Yeah. Shout out to that great podcast about history. He talks about like the lifespan being a 50-year period for most of the history of humanity. About 50 years is how long a human being lived until pretty recently. So it's almost like it takes 50 years to learn a lesson. And we are just now starting to understand what those unintended consequences are of taking tiny animals and putting them in tiny cages and exploiting them and breeding them for the traits to you know, amplify the traits that we find.
We want to increase production efficiency, increase growth, increase the number of eggs they're producing, make cows produce 20 times more milk than nature intended. Oh,
that was another of the slides that the guy at the VMX, at the veterinary expo, about 20 times the amount. I mean, wild. I mean, I think it's truly remarkable that human beings have figured this out, but holy crap, that's evil. We have these big brains, and what do we do with them? We use them to exploit others, and it's just horrifying.
Or we could use our big brains to like figure out how to make protein without animals, which we already know how to do.
Which we're doing. We're doing that too. Or to extract wonderful protein from plants and make it delicious. We figure that one out too. We do some pretty cool stuff, right? But my point was that those unintended consequences, we're just discovering that, oh, there's we killed all of the fish. We poisoned all the rivers and streams. What do we poison with? Yeah, poop. It was all the poop that we did. Or, you know, why do we have soil degradation? Oh, because the last 50 years we've gone crazy, and we've farmed all this land so that we have robotized that, so that we could feed these animals, and now the consequences, we're discovering them. And or even the global warming issue. If I know Ellen Moose doesn't care about the environment, but the methane and all the ruminants,
climate change. Well, I think a lot of people think, oh, you know, grazing, that's the most natural thing in the world. Yeah. And you want to stop cows from grazing on grass? Like, what is wrong with you vegans? But we don't talk about the sheer numbers of cows.
So let's talk about that. So they don't talk about the number and what we're feeding them, and that it's like the worst. It's like a perfect storm. We feed them the thing that makes them burp and fart the most, and then and we've bred them to do it at an amplified rate and all of that, and to get bigger and fatter as quick as possible. But in one of your talk at VMX, the Veterinarian Expo in Orlando this week or last week, you were talking about buffalo, and people are like, well, the buffalo did it. So what's the problem?
We had buffalo roaming the plains. We were like, There was
Aren't
no
they ruminants?
Climate change, methane. Then, well, okay. So in the 1500s, we had 30 to 60 million bison roaming the North American plains. And then we killed them off, the European settlers, and their numbers dropped to 325.
So the American bison, are they a, are they ruminants? They chew cud and do all the stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, so they're more like a, they're like a cow, kind of.
Yeah. But, you know, you're producing more methane when you're growing, when you're, and especially your modern dairy cow too, like producing massive quantities of milk by eating grass, all this stuff. So they, the buffalo who are older, who are like stable, they're done growing, eating grass, like fine. But right now we only have 500,000 bison here in the United States. When there used to be maybe as many as 60 million.
60 million. That's a lot of that's a lot of bison.
That's a lot of bison. Million.
And they're big. They're big, Crystal. Are they bigger than cows?
They are. They might be bigger than cows. You know, we have to like exactly compare the amount of methane to the cows. And, you know, we're spending all this money to try to get cows to produce less methane. So maybe we've really reduced the methane needed by cows. But we have 87 million domestic cows in the U.S. That's way more. 87 million. That's like more than a third more of the
is that how many we have on the hoof, or is that how many we slaughter every year?
That's how many on the hoof. Like,
okay.
Right now.
That's how many are,
that's
like
how
standing,
many are right now standing
sucking
in
air
right
on this side of the earth.
87 million.
87 million walking around. Dang. Okay, so, and these are, hold on, are these dairy and beef
domestic cows? Domestic cows. So dairy and beef, yeah.
Okay. Or slaughter bound. They're all, I guess they're all slaughter bound. I don't know how you would, I don't like the word calling them beef cows. I hate it when they do that, and I just did it. But
yeah,
slaughter
bound cows.
Take away my vegan card for that one. All right, so, but you're the veterinarian. Is there, they also have this hyper kind of genetically modified feed, right? The corn is GMO, the soy is GMO, but buffalo, they lived on like the American bison. Everyone calls them buffalo. I know that that's not really what they're called, but I just call them buffalo because that's what we call them. But they ate sagebrush and stuff. They ate stuff that was growing, that they had evolved on this earth to eat.
Yeah.
Mightn't that also be kind of less burpy and methane produced?
Well, so here's the thing. Like your grass-fed beef, that's actually worse for the environment. The grasses produce more methane. The corn and those diets actually produce less methane, maybe. And they have all these additives and things that they can add to reduce the methane. But, you know, instead of figuring out how to get cows to reduce methane and like genetically selecting for cows that produce less methane, how about we just produce protein without cows? Like,
rethink the whole protein system. Yeah.
Easy. Yeah. Why are we, we're always trying to solve a problem that maybe shouldn't exist in the first place. And
well, there's
maybe
one
we
quick
gotta...
way to solve the problem, right? And it's not just go vegan though. It's also about calling out authority, questioning the power structures and thinking critically about this. This is something I think I'm still heartened that what's happening right now in this tumult that we're all living through, I'm hoping that will open some people's eyes, like Dorothy on at the end of the Golden Road, whatever it was called, the Yellow Brick Road, or like Elphaba at the end of, we'll talk about that next time, I hope. We'll talk about Wicked and the animal rights.
Should we
stuff.
Talk about Wicked? Yeah.
Yeah. But this show's over though, Crystal. This is it. Yeah. This is the end. I want to tell everyone to go vegan because obviously it's the only choice for a thinking person who is looking at the world through critical eyes. And I'm excited that that now we're in a time we got front row tickets to whatever happens, Crystal.
Yeah, and turns out you can be healthy without eating animals. And we should also tell companies to do that too, make it a little bit easier. McDonald's, have boared cow milk in your,
in your happy meals.
Yeah, have some Beyond chicken nuggets for the kids. Like, there's no reason for these companies to continue selling animal products when there's a perfectly good animal-free alternative. So make it easier for people to choose to have to eat a diet that's in alignment with their values.
I mean, they're limiting our food choices. I mean, this is and the future is choice. Despite what the governor, what Governor Pillen of Nebraska thinks, the future is choice. The future is diversification, biodiversity, and food diversity. That's how we're going to make it through climate change. That's how we're going to make it through is more choices, and those choices are going to be healthier and animal free. They have to be, or else we're not going to make it. Crystal, where can people find you? Like, if they want to know more of and like follow your kind of adventures and stuff, where are you most active on social media?
I'm most active on Twitter, Dr. Crystal Heath. But you know, I'm on all the social media platforms. And where can they find you, Sky?
YouTube mostly. I'm a Skyjack Morgan, and I like to talk about mostly critical thinking in the news. But every Sunday we do Vegan Sunday School, so you know, try to keep it going for the animals. Always speak up, and because I always got a lot to say about it, obviously.
Yeah, and maybe we'll talk about Wicked next week. I saw the play. I have not seen the movie yet,
and I've seen the movie and haven't seen the play. So that would be we should both read the book. I've seen the movie. Don't watch the movie. I love it, but you don't want me to.
Okay.
And I won't watch the play, but we'll both read the book, and we'll see where we meet in the middle.
Yeah, that'll be fun and exciting.
I wonder if there's an animal rights message in the book, or are they just like, or did they just put that in the play, and that just ended up in as a huge part of the movie? It's a major thing in the movie, so we could talk for an hour about that. I think, I mean, like animal rights in movies, and especially the Wicked. It's part of the zeitgeist, right? It's still topical.
People are talking about it.
Yeah, Wicked part two isn't even out.
I know. And that's a whole nother thing. Do we have to wait another year?
I don't know, but it's popular. Popular. Popular.
So yeah, it's good stuff coming up.
Yes, indeed.
And we will always new stuff coming out of the Trump administration, and always new bird flu information coming out.
It is one of the most exciting times to be alive, isn't it? It's like every day there's something. I'm sure that I'm not going to live as long as my parents because I'm every day I'm stressed out about all the new stuff happening. And so like, you know, it's always just a surprise every minute. And I don't know. I'm excited. Yeah. Why live a boring life?
Yeah, may we live in interesting times, and that's where we're at. So no more dooming. Like, we should all be excited ready to fight.
Yeah, fight. You know? Yeah, we keep fighting.
Let's do it. We're not giving up.
Embrace change. Embracing change is embracing life. So I choose to embrace change because I love life, you know?
Yeah.
The most exciting time to be alive is now. And I can't wait to see what happens next. Yeah. That's it. That's the
Stay
show.
Tuned.
That's Vegan World.
Donate, support the show. Public radio.
Public radio is my favorite. I only listen to listener supported radio. That's all I do. Yeah.
No advertisements, just an hour long. Going.
Straight shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where else would you be able to do this? And very interesting conversation. We appreciate y'all being live on the air here in Houston, Texas. 90.1 FM. On Vegan World Radio, Dr. Crystal Heath, and activist Skyjack Morgan. Really interesting conversation, y'all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we hope to have you back regularly because I want to hear that conversation about the animal rights in the movies and all the
Absolutely.
Rest. Absolutely. So we'll try to stay excited and not hopeless.
You got doom. This. Do it.
Thanks for thank you for bringing the fight here to KPFT.
Thank you for having us.
Stand whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit stoptextsstoprex.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The 8-track tape format was introduced in 1965 and held its reign through the 1970s. This is Our Focus. In the beginning, 8-track was an automotive-only format, so music from this period sounded best when it was played really loud through Jensen Triac speakers mounted on the back dash of a Camaro. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear on 8-track radio.
Join Tom Richards for A-Track Radio Sunday morning at 5 here on KPFT.
Yeah, I know for a lot of you that's a little bit.
And now, a word from one of our listener sponsors.
So I'm John Moffitt. I've been in the Houston scene a long time. Back in the early 70s, I used to work on underground newspapers. There was a lot of fight against racism, white supremacy, the Ku Klux Klan influence in the Houston Police Department. And Pacifica was a place you could go, and they talked about that a lot, which is, of course, why they got bombed by the Ku Klux Klan. White supremacists didn't like Pacifica and Space City News and Abraxas. I went down to the studio a few times, got involved in some panel discussions. There were a lot of interesting parties and characters around that time. That's my memory.